because the peloton is getting younger and younger now, you know, you don't have guys winning Grand Tours at 30 years old or 27 years old that much anymore, where that was sort of considered your kind of peak endurance years or whatever, and you would win a Grand Tour or the Classics and that, where now you have a 19-year-old, if we take Paul Seychelles, who's going to the Tour de France now, and he's, you know, expected to win, you know, so to speak, or perform super well. But what has changed with that, you know, if we really take what you said on the money ball, is you're now dealing with a kid who is a kid. You know, there's 19 years old, you're still a child, or 17 years old. But in the cycling environment, you want him to be a seasoned professional, old professional. But when he leaves that, you still want him to be a kid, you know, otherwise he misses out on a lot. And that is kind of a really important point that you are now dealing with, is that you're dealing with this guy, you're going, well, you know, you're paying him X, which is typically a lot of money. You need him to be as this mature adult, but he's still a kid.
This is AI That Works by Exeter, where real stories of AI and data meet business reality.
Welcome to AI That Works. I'm Johannes, a solutions architect at Exeter, a tech and consulting company that helps organizations put AI to work. We see chatbots thrown at everything these days, promises are big, results frequently are not. I want to talk in this podcast to people who are experts in the fields and use AI and data in sports, business, science, wherever data matters. We ask, how are decisions made? What data matters? What data doesn't? What works? What doesn't? And what can organizations learn from it? AI sits on three pillars: infrastructure, algorithms, data. Today, we want to look at data and how it's used to drive decisions, how it's used to get ahead, in this case, in first place. We will enter the world of professional cycling together with our guest, John Wakefield, from Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe. He and his team use large amounts of data and sophisticated machine learning algorithms to predict rider performance and used it to build a team from scratch on a computer through the power of data. Before we dive into our first episode, we would like to hear from you. Do you put AI to work? Do you make data-driven decisions? Do you see AI or data have a real impact in your work? Tell us in the comments on YouTube or Spotify, where you can see the full-length video podcast. And since this is obviously our first episode, do share this episode or the channel with somebody who works with data. Normalerweise ist dieser Podcast auf Deutsch, aber weil unser Gast heute Englisch spricht, werden wir den Podcast heute auf Englisch machen. Viel Spaß dabei. Let's get into today's story. We're joined by someone who works at the intersection of sports science, data, and team performance. Together with John Wakefield from Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, we explore how data science can help make better decisions and build a high-performance cycling team from scratch, and what any organization can learn from the process, from the way data, models, and human judgment come together to make better decisions. John is the team's director of coaching, sports science, and technical development, and one of the people shaping how the current and next generation of riders are identified, developed, and prepared for the World Tour. You have played a key role in building the Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe development team, that's cyclists under the age of 23 and 19, respectively. You built that team in 2025, and you built it from scratch, from behind a computer, almost entirely data-driven. And you have a lot to say about all components of cycling: training, sports science, data, and long-term performance. Thank you for being here, because you have a long career all the way from motocross and then through accidents, not by accident, you got into cycling.
Yes.
I guess luckily, because now you're a successful cycling coach. You're the director of coaching, sports science, and technical development, which is an interesting intersection of many fields. I don't want to run, I employ anybody who's listening to use their favorite AI to have the full manuscript of your career. But I feel like the last year is a good summary of how successful you as a coach were and your team in finding talent and building successful teams, because Florian Lipowitz, as at just 24 years old, at his first Tour de France, finished as the best young rider for your team And being the best young rider isn't even the biggest accomplishment, because he finished third overall at the Tour de France and is only the fourth German to ever do so.
Yes.
So I think that speaks for your abilities as a team coach and as a team. I have your coaching principles as including it must constantly evolve. The margin between success and failure is razor thin, and performance gains are coming from attention to detail. And you're known for a patient, long-term approach in developing young riders. Would you agree, or
you've done some pretty good homework?
any of these statements? Does that sound
correct.
Like you?
No, correct. You've definitely done your homework. Well done.
Okay, I feel like nobody really says, "Oh, I just look for short-term gains." Everybody would like to claim that they do long-term. Like a long-term approach. With you, it does look like it is really, like, your track record shows that that you have been doing that. You are building the rookie team and you're a coach. What is your daily life like, if you want to give an overview of what these things are? Because that's a lot of responsibility in one person. Technical development, sports science, and coaching.
It's a busy day, but everybody in the industry is. It consists of, if we take those sort of three umbrellas, the coaching side is the team of coaches that I work with. You know, I'm constant communication with them. It's the overall pro cycling team's athletes' prescription of their coaching, making sure that their overall wellness and performance is where it should be. The sports science side of it is making sure that we are up to date on the sports science side of performance. So, you know, new methodologies, new trends, what is good, what isn't good. And then the technical side of it, and the sports science side is also from, you know, the data and that performance software side. And then from the technical development is, you know, everything from tire compounds to tire pressure to aerodynamic frames to stitching on a skin suit, etc. So, and different materials and everything in between that. I am lucky enough to have a really phenomenal team of within those three departments that I work with, and they essentially make me look like I know what I'm doing. So it's an honor to work with all of them. It's some of the best minds that are definitely in the industry.
Well, the results show that, and we get to have you here so you can talk about just a few of these things. And I guess each of these, and you have appeared on many podcasts already, going into detail in each or some of these fields. Today, we want to talk about data and how, especially, I guess that's the occasion. Data is your everyday life and you're using it on race day in preparation. The occasion of why you're here is that you built an entire team basically from scratch on a computer, kind of like the movie Moneyball shows, which I think is an excellent movie.
Yeah.
And you did that for cycling where, you just use numbers instead of gut feeling and the traditional scouting methods to find performance athletes and to predict the potential in especially young riders.
Yeah. So we kind of combined the two. So we did have gut feeling and scouting that kind of brought the data to us. And then from the data side, obviously, that's where the final decisions were made. So it was kind of a collaboration between the two, but the how much labor intensive the data side was definitely, I would say, which the gentleman I worked with, Tim Mearson, he brought the human element of, hey, look at this kid as an example. And then, you know, I kind of took all the data and then we made a final decision at the end of the day. But yeah, it was excessively data and labor intensive.
Was that the obvious next step to do and like a natural conclusion of where things are? Or was it a little bit of a leap technologically and a little bit of a risk to make an attempt like that? Or is it because data is already very present, it's not entirely new, but building it at that scale was that outrageous and risky or just a natural progression?
I think it was a natural progression. You know, yes, you always had access to athletes' data. That's how you would look at an athlete and you think, you know, yes, he would fit in or no, he wouldn't, or whatever the case may be, or maybe not yet. But I do feel what we had done, we had kind of delved a lot deeper into it because it was a first year project and we simply had nothing. You know, it wasn't that, you know, we had a system in place already, especially going into the under 23 category, which it's not the same category as what it was 2 years ago. You know, like 2-3 years ago, it was still a junior category, where now your under 23 category is essentially World Tour without the depth. You know, so those decisions that you needed to make, and especially where you're looking for these young talents to know how much further you can get out of them in the future, you know, and that's where that deep dive really came into it, in terms of data analysis and data dump, if we want to call it that. And that I feel, and there are other teams doing very good work, but I really felt what we had done, because we didn't have the luxury of already having this system in place, we kind of really took maybe a step forward and a little bit ahead of what your conventional scouting and data dumps were.
So welcome opportunity to start the process new also.
Yeah.
And so you already said, so you do scouting first, you see people who seem to show potential.
Yes.
And then you go into there. Would it make sense to do it the other way around and like start with a clean slate and just get a bunch of data on different athletes and then kind of filter out the most promising candidates? Or are there too many factors like politics and are those people even available? Would that not make any sense?
So the answer is yes, because we did run a project last year on the sideline that was very much like that. So we got data first, we analyzed the data, and then we would go to a discussion or go, hey, you know, this guy is good, rider A, B, and C, let's go to a further discussion. So we kind of reverse periodized it in a way. But you would need to get access first of that rider to make those informed decisions. Okay. So it's not to say that we saw rider A racing, and then we think he's good, we approach him, we get the data, where on this project that we ran last year and a few other years was kind of data first based on one or two testing, but we never physically met the rider itself. So we get the data and then we would bring it in closer. So as I said, it was more like a reverse periodized approach.
Interesting. And then you probably, with your name as a coach and your name as a team, have no issue acquiring the talent.
Yeah.
Once you've shown interest.
Yeah, people are not really saying no if you knock on the door. So it's a luxury we have, which we're really grateful for.
Yeah.
Hype or helpful?
I want to play hype or helpful with you.
Okay.
And give you a statement and then want to hear your opinion on it. And if it actually, that actually holds up, or no, that's entirely incorrect. So the first statement would be, the more data, the better. It's a matter of quantity rather than quality or the algorithm.
Algorithm is important. You can't deny that. But more is hypo. You want quality at the end of the day.
Okay, go in depth. This one might be more interesting. You can predict race results accurately without ever seeing a race from training data alone. Does that hold up?
There is truth in it. I will say that. The only reason I say not entirely, because of how stochastic cycling is in nature. You know, so it's not a 100-meter race. You know, 100 meters, you could pretty much predict that is what it is based off data. The guy has a good day, he has good legs, he'll run, whatever, under 9 seconds, whatever it is. Cycling doesn't work like that because you have outside factors. Although it is used from a data thing, you have weather, you have tarmac, you have someone crashing, etc. So, you know, there it comes down a little bit to the on paper. It's yes, on you don't race on paper, but it does have a very good and positive influence on a potential race outcome.
With a sophisticated data-driven approach, you can take human decision-making out of the equation. Is that thinkable? Maybe in the future?
Maybe in the future. Not now, I don't think. Yeah. Taking human side. Then you would need to... Then the machine has to have your brain for now, currently. But I think it will get to a stronger point than where it is at the moment. But I don't think it's there yet.
Probably also a question of performance level.
Yeah.
At an amateur level, having somebody, you already said that, have this like automatically generated program might do something.
Correct.
You know, the world level that you're operating at, it's not there yet. Okay.
You know, like programs have been downloadable off the internet for years and years. You know, so I can download something, a 6-week program to this race, and I know I will go better. But it's more than that, especially the higher the level you go, it becomes a bit more fine-tuned than that. And so the specificity is a bit stronger.
Hyper helpful. The superpower of data-driven approach is you can identify hidden potential for growth rather than riders that are already strong but overlooked.
Yes, I'd say there's definitely a strong component to that, because that is essentially what you want to do. So the answer, I would say... Hype, maybe not a capital H, but definitely fact.
It's the potential.
Yeah.
No strong rider is overlooked because nobody checked the data.
Correct.
This one, maybe a little bit controversial. Large language models are the key to success in the future. AI models can predict performance better than more traditional methods.
Definitely not now at the moment, because there you need to teach it to do stuff. So because some stuff, so the answer is, I would say it can help you be quicker making those decisions is what I would say. I don't think yet, yes or no, I'm on the fence on that, because you can fast track what you want to do by using AI. However, some of the stuff that you get back currently is like, well, you need to learn a few bit more things. No. So,
and I feel like you're already ahead of the AI thing with your very sophisticated, specific machine learning models.
Yeah.
And I actually do see that quite a bit, and it is a good question. Now people think large language models are the thing, and then they try to throw it at everything. We have so many clients actually do that, and they're like,
can't
we solve any problem with that? And then you have to actually look at it, and you're like, well, this is not solving your problem.
Correct.
It's,
but it can definitely, as I said, like it fine tunes and fast tracks definitely at the moment. Maybe in other sports, which, maybe like a baseball, which is highly statistic valued, like I know in terms of, or football, where American football, where it's like running yards and stuff like that. I think maybe in that definitely, and I'm sure they are super far ahead on that. Cycling, I don't think yet it's there, but I definitely won't say that it won't get there.
Yeah, well, I like that you kind of helped me on the LLMs are not everything, because there is, as always, I've seen a few waves of, there was the blockchain Bitcoin thing that was like a good 2 years, and then everybody tried to find a problem that they could solve with that solution.
Yes.
And now it's AI, which is making amazing results, but it's just not the solution.
Yeah.
It's a tool in the chain.
But also maybe it's just me, maybe I wouldn't trust it 100% yet, like full on trust, so to speak.
Certainly not, especially when looking things up. I feel like that's the retrieval is still, if it's like specific data, it's like a general concept, it can do very well, like specific performance values, maybe it would just start making things up.
Yeah, correct.
What is something that you look at? Maybe to start with the simple metrics, obviously riding performance. What is the data points that you look at, and what are qualities within those that you're interested in?
It's a lot, because you have different profile of riders. So whether you see someone as a sprinter, you have certain benchmarks. If someone is like a classics rider, or if they're a a stage race as an example. You have, we have certain benchmarks that we would compare them to. But also at the same time, you want to understand is just because they don't have the benchmark today, you know, it doesn't mean that they're not good enough. You know, you want to look at how did they get to today and what do you think you can get out of them, you know, for the coming years. And within those benchmarks on what we see, you know, because you may see a young kid who has phenomenal data and every benchmark is tick green, boom, boom, boom. But in terms of when you look at their overall data, they may be literally at the limit or the physiological limit where they are as a human being. So you're not going to get much out of them in the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years potentially. You know, so that is something that is really important to note.
So predicting the headroom is really where the game is correct. At. And I guess correcting for all these other factors. How do you build a team? Do you have certain roles in mind and you look specifically for the role? And maybe what are those roles? Or is it more that you find the best riders and then fit them into the categories?
It's a little bit of both. So you want to build a complete team. So, you know, everybody wants to win the Tour de France. You know, it's kind of standard. So you want to find someone that you potentially could see being competitive there. But at the same time, in a team, you need a sprinter, you need like two domestiques, you need mountain support. There are different elements of what you need. So you can't just go, well, these are the five best climbers and stage racers and you take them into the team. So what we did last year was we identified what we needed. So where we can win within the team itself and what also then going into the World Tour team, what do we need for the World Tour team in maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 years? And does this kid follow that progressional pathway all the way into the World Tour? So it really depends on what you need in the team. And as I said, with the rookies last year, we had nothing, like literally we had nothing. So it was building a complete team, you know, from workers to winners and everything in between that.
And then you basically try to fill a role years from now.
Correct.
And have the right talent already working up to that. Correct. Are there many surprises? Do you find people and they think they're one type and then you're like, no, you're a sprinter? Or does it change over time also?
It does, because what you've got to remember is that as a young kid, so whether they're 17, 18, 19 years old, they may not, typically they're not fully developed yet. So you don't really know where they will develop. You have a good idea, but sometimes they do go, it's not that they're going to go from an 80 kilogram sprinter to a 55 kilogram climber. You know, it's not on that, but he may not be, you know, maybe being good in juniors at sprinting, etc. But then, you know, as he develops, he may become like a sprinter that's good in medium mountains, but he can win from a small group as opposed to a big jump, you know. So that development does change and you need to adapt to that accordingly. So it's not a sure thing. And when you look at the data and you go, oh, you know, rider A is definitely our sprinter and he's going to be the next Cipollini. You know, it doesn't always work that way.
Well, and life happens. So
correct.
Things change, attitudes, yeah. Motivation.
They get girlfriends and then they go missing.
Is that the most destructive factor?
Yeah, it is.
The girlfriend factor.
Correct.
Suddenly. So,
yeah.
Time is limited.
Correct.
Okay, let's look at the different data points, because we already touched on a few. There's like very easy and obvious ones. You have a power meter on the bike. You have a heart rate sensor.
Yes.
That's like automatically collected. You have that throughout data. Mm. What are some of the classics that you look at? Power, heart rate, beyond that?
As I said, we have benchmarks in that. So whether it's, power is one, definitely you want to track, weight over time. You want to track progression in power. You want to see what their heart rate does. You also want to track wellness. So is a rider getting sick? Is he not? Is it too often that he's getting sick? You need to understand why, and that you will pick up from the data. And then we also have, you know, benchmarks being whether it's like your climbing speeds, whether it's torque recruitment values, it's durability, etc. So we extract all of that stuff out of the data, and then we create a profile of the rider according to that.
A rider getting sick more frequently would probably be a sign of overtraining, or could just be the person's individual.
Yeah, it could be anything. It could be simple that his recovery is just not good enough. It could be that his nutritional intake isn't correct. He's got bad habits, you know, something as simple as that. Or yes, it can also be overtraining, you know, like you have a young kid doing whatever, 25 hours a week. It's really not a sustainable or healthy approach to his training.
You said well-being, and that would get me into the, I guess, softer markers and the more tricky things to measure.
Yeah.
Because there's like self-reporting, or it's just not as exact as a power meter. Yeah. How do you, is there a lot of self-reporting? What are some of the maybe surprising factors that you look at? Do you look at mood, or I guess sleep would be an easier one,
yeah,
like outside of the actual racing? What are some things that go into the...
Sleep is one, definitely, yeah, on how much quality sleep they're getting. Mood is another one that's typically linked to their sleep profile. Stress is another one. Your weight is, and heart rate variability is really good. But, you know, weight you can also track is, you know, if they're very stochastic in their weight, that typically leads to not the best health or best recovery. But as I said, if it's sleep, mood, stress values, it's really good.
There's like secondary and tertiary things. Like obviously you will get like a 3D profile of the course and wind data or weather data, like the heat of the day.
Yes.
All that plays a role to, I guess, judge the performance.
Yes. There you would go, you know, if you want to extract those external things, you know, we also, just on the rider profile, the data we'd extract is also, you know, on the website, as an example, Pro Cycling Stats, you literally have everything of the rider's kind of race results, etc. So we can extract that to certain times of the year to understand why he did or did not, or what's happening with regards to his overall performances. But, you know, stuff like weather is really important for our stages, especially for our sporting directors, you know, in terms of having plans and tactical and et cetera performance approaches to the races. So whether that's just temperature, whether it's humidity, whether it's, you know, rain, snow, thunder, everything else that gets thrown at you, that all comes into effect, you know, for everyday racing, and that's really important, especially, as I say, to our sporting directors. So that's also a large volume of data that we do grab.
Nutrition and hydration, obviously, yes, key factor. Is there a better way than standing with the clipboard and writing down one gel, 2 liters of water?
Yeah.
Do you have something that solves that problem?
Yeah, so we have a software system that... tracks all that with the riders, and it also gives them at the same time their meal plans, you know, so whatever, whether it's X amount of carbs, X proteins, X fats, you know, whether that's breakfast, lunch and dinner, and then also feeding on the bike depending on the stage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there, because I remember from the 2 hour record attempt in the marathon by Eliud Kipchoge, they had,
yes,
like while they were racing, he would drink and then throw away the bottle. Somebody would pick up the bottle, measure it, and then they would calculate how much carb and water mix needs to be in it for the next bottle to drink.
Yes.
Is that the level that you do at every race, or is it during the race more by feel and they know what the plan is, they know how much they're, and I guess it's always more carbs that they need to take in?
It's not always more. So is what you described, the answer is yes, they have their nutrition per stage for the whole stage, but nobody's throwing a bottle and no one's collecting the bottle to thing, but all those bottles are there for the day and they know exactly how much they need to be having, typically grams per hour for the race, and that is counted accordingly, and that is updated at the end of the stage for that, for dinner, for the following day stage at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think...
No one's running behind the cyclist collecting bottles. So.
It would be, yeah, that might be excessive.
It'd be a fit guy if he is. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a lot of bottles. That's...
Yeah. And you also need to fight with a lot of spectators on the road.
I guess that's the trophy everybody wants to have, right?
It's worth more than gold.
It's like a self-cleaning system, isn't it? Like you don't need a cleaning, maybe, for the gels or
something else. Yeah, like the packets and stuff. But they're off. kind of waste zones now that are allocated during stages. So you can only really throw away in those zones, especially packets and that. But, you know, if you're on a mountain or something and you throw a bottle off, it's, yeah, it still happens.
It might.
Yeah.
Has your approach to data and your desire to have as much information and the highest quality of information changed the training approach? Like, did it feed back that you're trying to make adjustments to get better or more data?
Yeah, data definitely has changed your coaching prescription, or I would say more from my side personally, more on the monitoring side, you know, to understand what that rider has done and what do we need to do the next day or the next couple of days training wise. So, you know, is our load and stimulus on the correct path or is it not? Do we need to back off? Do we need to add more load, etc.? But yeah, definitely as data has become more freely available or more available, your coaching definitely has become more, I would say, specific to that specific rider. You know, it's not like there's one coach for the whole team and you can coach everyone essentially the same. Like all the sprinters are the same, all the climbers the same. So, yeah, it's definitely helped and elevated the game for more precision in terms of what you do.
We talked about quality earlier. Regarding quality for the data, when I look at my sports watch or your sports watch or what any amateur can do, how far away, how much more sophisticated is the data that you're collecting? Is it far off and not even comparable, or is it within reach? Would any data that I am getting on my way to work every day be good for prediction?
Yeah, so like that's I think where there's a yin and a yang with it is that, you know, you can collect everything I collect, you can theoretically have available to you and you can collect it. Obviously you can't get, we mentioned him earlier, Florian Lipovitz's data, definitely not. But what he gives me, you can get it as the normal person in the street or the age group cyclist or whatever you want to call it. You know, those things are super freely available. You know, it's not that our power meters are any more special to what you buy in the shops. You know, maybe they're more accurate because of our calibration systems that we have, but it's not that we get something special out of it that you don't. It's what we do with that data that will separate us from the guy in the street.
So let's look at the briefly at the blocks that we were discussing. First block, data collection, key takeaways. You have to get all the data together, quality. Anything else where you would say in data collection, profiling a rider, those are the important factors?
Yeah, so like what's really important is getting good data. So like what I call clean data, I don't know if that's a thing in the data world, but I call it clean data, where you need accurate data to make those decisions. When you don't get accurate data, which is sometimes the case kind of often, like if you, as an example, just on a head unit, if there's maybe water damage or something, you know, your data that you get is wrong. And a lot of the time, if you, some athletes don't, or coaches or whatever, don't clean that up, you know, so you look at a rider and you see maybe really bad numbers or you see really good numbers and you kind of don't identify that it's right or wrong or it's high or low or whatever the case may be, you kind of make a false assessment on the rider and you either go, oh, he's not good, and you let a talent disappear, or you go, oh, he's phenomenal, and then you get like a bit of a donkey, you know. So it's in terms of that, it's really important that the data you look at is 99% accurate. I don't believe it'll be 100% for a couple of factors, but you know, 90% is also good enough, you know. So that to me is really important on how you receive it and what you get.
Biases and blind spots.
Do you have any examples of maybe biases, metrics that you looked at that you think mattered, that didn't matter as much or were unreliable because the data just isn't there or the quality isn't good?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you always want to improve that in terms of what metrics you look at. So you kind of do a, as I call, a cleanup, you know, also with how cycling is progressing in what I call in modern cycling in today's terms, which is probably the last sort of 5 years coming forward till today. It changes kind of constantly. And the reason I say that is we did a research, published a research in 2022 or 23. I won't tell the other guys, I forgot that. And last year we realized it was completely null and void from a new research that we did on literally the same topic. So there are definitely metrics and data points that I won't say are not valid, because everything is valid, but not as of a importance of what how cycling has changed. So as it changes, you look at different things. I'm just not going to say what those metrics are in case other teams are still looking at them.
That's
yeah.
fair. That's
yeah,
fair
but definitely as it evolves, and you know, as even data evolves, you have to evolve with it at the same time and be up to date.
And maybe the other way around, are there things that you find very, and I understand if you might not be able to give away very specific things, but other things that are, you have mentioned a few times, just attitude and I guess mood, like if, yeah. like personal life, I guess at that level of performance playing a big role. Other things, I remember from the Moneyball movie that the scouts were talking a lot about like personal stuff.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this guy has like, oh, he smokes, or he has personal issues. He gets angry or something.
Yeah.
Are there many surprises that you had along the way where you discovered, oh, this has a surprising impact?
Yes, because the peloton is getting younger and younger now. You know, you don't have guys winning Grand Tours at 30 years old or 27 years old that much anymore, where that was sort of considered your kind of peak endurance years or whatever, and you would win a Grand Tour or the classics and that. Where now, you know, you have a 19-year-old, if we take Paul Seychelles, who's going to the Tour de France now, and he's, you know, expected to win, you know, so to speak, or perform super well. But what has changed with that, you know, if we really take what you said on the money ball, is you're now dealing with a kid who is a kid. You know, there's 19 years old, you're still a child, or 17 years old. But in the cycling environment, you want him to be a seasoned professional, old professional. But when he leaves that, you still want him to be a kid, you know, otherwise he misses out on a lot. And that is kind of a really important point that you are now dealing with, is that you're dealing with this guy, you're going, well, you know, you're paying him X, which is typically a lot of money. You need him to be as this mature adult, but he's still a kid, you know, hasn't had his heart broken, hasn't gotten drunk, you know, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And that comes with its own fair share of obstacles that you now need to navigate in professional cycling. And that, believe it or not, is quite data controlled. Yes, you have the personality, but there are trends that we track with that in terms of data.
This or that.
We have a few little games that we want to play, or repeating segments. And the first one will be this or that, where we want to get your opinion. Which one do you prefer if you had to choose one?
Okay.
The first one would be quality over quantity, which is always interesting with regards to data. Would you rather have more data, or would you rather go more in depth and have a higher quality of the range of data that you already have?
Always quality over quantity.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that means you already have just so much, or just because it's much more relevant?
It's more relevant. So you can have a whole lot of data that essentially does nothing for you just because you have a high volume of it, where you want to do quality data at the end of the day. You know, so if I give an example, you can have a huge, like whatever, 3 terabytes of an athlete's data, whether it's training files as an example. You know, you can have 6 years of data, but you only want to take out that quality of data that's in it. So at the end of the day, you want quality over quantity, because you want to make informed decisions, which are pretty important, especially in the performance environment.
And at your level,
yeah,
obviously it's like the margin for error is very, very small. Okay. Would you rather do faster development cycles or have more time per development cycle to go in depth and perfect things? So higher iteration speed over getting things exactly right.
Can I choose both of those? Because that's essentially what you want. So, run that by me again so I can think.
So you can iterate faster. So you could try out a thing and then just run a new thing every day versus having a metric and just really go into the detail, have a long cycle. I guess in your field, it's like there's a season, there's maybe a training cycle. Would you rather have them shorter and do more, or do you wish you had more time per season?
Yeah, you always want more time at the end of the day, because if you have time, you have the quality that you can do, so you don't rush through things. So if you don't have that luxury, you want it to be done as quick as possible with that final outcome.
And personally, would you like more days in the week or longer days?
Longer days is what I would like.
So you can get an extra training session in or get some sleep?
Yeah, correct. So like by Monday afternoon, I'm not already doing Tuesday's work. So I can finish Monday's work and finish off and then have Tuesday. So I would rather have longer days than extra days.
Okay. Is there a big difference throughout the week for you, or is it just training days and then training cycles?
Yeah, every day is essentially the same, Monday to Sunday.
Okay.
It's not that, I know some people go home on a Friday and they go to the beach and stuff. I may go to the beach, but it's not like that thing,
So you could go to the beach equally each day?
Correct.
If you only had one metric or even one value, one number that you needed to use to predict if a rider is going to be a success or not, do you know what that number would be?
If it's one metric, it's a tough one. I would go with the compound score is what I would go with if I had a gun to my head. Yeah.
So the compound score is a bunch of metrics. I feel like that's almost cheating on this answer.
So it's a value. It's different per rider. So it's not just, you have a number. So it's whatever, it's 2,000 and that determines success. So, it's based around a specific rider weight, rider type, et cetera. So it's not as easy as just a simple thing, but it's a value that you do in a calculation and that's pretty much what I would do. If you put a gun to my head, I would use the compound score.
That's your go-to. Yeah. I have one more question to jump all the way back to the start in collecting the data, because as you said, you have like these very young riders and then you compare them. How does that, I assume that's going to be tricky. How do you compare riders at different ages, which I think you have to then correct and benchmark differently depending on their age?
So there it comes down to sort of identification of what sort of rider type you see in them. Are they a sprinter, climber, etc., classics rider, and then you would group them accordingly. But that job is for our expert scouting group. So that's Tim and Michael. They need to identify that, and then they bring that rider and they say, hey, here is Michael Smith, and we see him as like a GC climber, or we see him as a classics guy. Then we extract data and we look at the data, and then we know kind of where they are in terms of benchmarks and processes.
And do you have a lot of historic data already that you could compare against?
Yes.
I don't know how long data has been collected at this level. If you can go like back to the old guys and see what they were doing like when they were 17.
Yeah. So
is that a possibility?
Yeah. So you can. So I worked closely with an example of how that data has kind of changed over time, especially with the young kids. The 2022 winner of probably the second biggest amateur race in the world, he won it, and he won it super convincingly, like really dominant performance. He wouldn't have finished, he would have been lucky to finish in the top 10 to 12 at last year's Baby Giro. So, from that side, you kind of see how things have developed. So to go, oh, you know, we have this rider who's a pro now, but he was an amateur 10 years ago, is completely null and void. It's not even the same category anymore. So you got to keep on, as I said, that research study we did, it was at the time really based on under 23s. It was phenomenal data, really good research. That now kind of you're looking at that at a lower age group category now, you know, which isn't even really relevant. And that's sort of within a 2-3 year span.
Yeah. The overall performance is just...
It's just going through the roof. And that is because of accessible data, accessible metrics, et cetera, et cetera. You know, so all these kids have all the toys available where only a few had them before, you know, and then coaching is better now because of that, because you have that data acquisition, et cetera, et cetera. So you can make informed decisions.
With regards to age, is it just the performance and success pressure that makes you want to, and I see that in other sports with very young football players already getting into the pro teams.
Yes.
Is it a performance pressure mostly, or is it also that you can predict better who is worth investing in? Does that play a role at all?
Yes, there's always performance pressure. You know, any professional sport is high pressure, you know, and because you kind of grabbing these kids or are scouting and identifying them younger and younger, you know, that pressure is for them to perform is immediate now. You know, do you, yeah, it's tricky with young kids, but you know, you do, you want to take that data, as we said earlier, is to go, well, this is what we see today, but do we see that in 2, 3, 4, 5 years? You know, and the kids are being signed for 2, 3, 4, 5 years at a time, and that pressure does come. So it's quite a how do you call it? It's a balancing act.
Do you feel like there might be a cutoff where you just can't, like, where you just can't predict anymore because there's too much volatility?
Definitely.
Super young, so I still remember school times.
Yeah,
it's not that long ago. I'm not getting old, and this light is not doing me any favors.
Yeah. It's the lighting.
Is there a cutoff at some point where you just the volatility gets too high, and then too much happens between, I guess, the ages of 14, 15, 16, and then again after school?
Yeah, definitely. You know, there's been some young kids that have been scouted that were predicted, you know, they've been 6-year contracts and they were meant to go on and be super successful. And after 2 years, it fell apart, unfortunately, for whatever reason. But then, you know, the young guy that we scouted last year, he was like, he was okay. Nothing really on paper, data, nothing to write home about. And he has excelled exactly from where, you know, in a very short space of time. We gave him a good environment. We gave him what he needs. And he's really jumped over the fence. So to say, oh, can you...
As you predicted probably from your data.
We knew that he was going to be good. There was no doubt, provided we gave him the platform and and the support. But we didn't know he'd be that good. You know, so, but then we've had guys where we're like, hey, this guy's going to be phenomenal. And unfortunately, in 2 years, that was it. So I don't believe no matter how much data you have or clever brains that you can predict that far into the future, especially with cycling. You know, it's just too stochastic in nature and it's just too tough currently.
Even outside of, I want to say, like life events or like injury. I mean, anybody can break, especially on like fast bikes. You can have a major accident and then be thrown off. But even outside of these like big, somebody fell off the wagon, there's still varieties.
Yeah, that 50-50 opportunity is still too strong. I won't say that, you know, maybe that's today and tomorrow. I won't say maybe with how kind of like IT and stuff is changing, you know, maybe there you can get more of an accurate trajectory, you know, providing everything goes well in a perfect world. But the one thing that you do need to remember on cycling is like everything on paper looks amazing, but you don't race on paper, you know, so that's where the one catch comes in. But I think to predict an exact trajectory to the point, providing he stays healthy, doesn't crash, etc., I think currently you can't do it. You can get a very good trajectory because we do have that, but it's not it's definitely not a set in stone.
We're going to quote that. The races are not won on paper.
Yes, correct. So you look at riders on paper, yeah, essentially, but you don't. But you don't race on paper.
Attitude, and yeah, there's still humans. I want to get into decision making and calls to action. What level do you have automatic decision making that is entirely data driven yet, or do you get input and insight, and then you make the decision probably together with the rider? Is there a level at which you can just output instructions, or is it still very much that the human needs to stay in the loop and aid in the decision making?
Is that on race performance, or as an example, hiring a talent or scouting a talent?
Well, actually, both would be interesting. Maybe hiring a talent is that's a one-off decision. So I guess you want to have everybody look at it, and then that is supported by data.
Yeah, correct. So the data part is really, really important, and you get very, very good information on it. As I said earlier, if you have your benchmarks and you know what you're looking at, or, you know, if you have specifics, and that is really important. however, there is the element, because it's still a sport and you have a human body connected to it, you do need to make a decision based also on the human side. So you could have the best data, everything is great, and the guy is just unbelievably difficult to work with, isn't friends with anyone or whatever. You need to then decide, okay, well, do we win races, but we just have a constant fight with him, or do we step aside and say, okay, look, from a personality side, which is a human draw card, we're not going to go that route. Mm. An example I had, I worked with a rider who, phenomenal guy, and phenomenal data. Like, he should have won multiple Grand Tours. And all the physiology, all the data, everything showed it, the testing data, and that you put him on the road and he just couldn't deliver. Which was super, I won't say super strange, because he did deliver, but not to the potential that our data showed, and there it was, okay, we're going to go with him anyway, because we know he can do something, but he definitely boxed under his weight category, put it that way.
Do you have a guess what a factor would be? Is it attitude, motivation? I mean, race, like sports psychology at your level, where everybody's going at human limits, probably plays a very, very big role.
Yeah, I think he kind of buckled under big match temperament, personally. When you took that Grand Tour aspect away from him and you told him to go stage hunt at a Grand Tour, he'd win stages because the pressure was significantly less. So that's where that, you can track it with data, from a psychological point, by stuff they do, and you can kind of get trends and processes. But he was a perfect example of it. When you looked at him on paper, you were like, mate, we're going to make millions and win races. And he just didn't deliver on race day.
Perfect segue, because I would like to get further into how you're doing something with the data and what. And it would be interesting, maybe first, who gets access to the data? Does every rider get their report, or maybe even action already from the data automatically? Or do you get to look at it, and does it take your experience to make a call to action, to reason on what is presented and then have adjustments made? Who is involved in the cycle?
So rider has access to his data. So if we call it, his access is freely available to training files, etc. So whatever he does on the bike, on and off the bike, he has full access to it. Essentially, it's his data. So we can't stop him looking at that data, and we never will. It's what the coach, if we take it, what I take Florian's data, I analyze the data on my own, and then I would report back to him if need be on, hey, this is A, B, or C, or D, E, and F. If it's a report, we do have obviously reporting, but that is typically for management and stuff like that. We do obviously report back to riders at the same time. So it's not that they have the ability to analyze to the degree that we do, or create reports that we do, because we have that on a separate software system, but they have access to, you know, all their sleep data, their wellness data, their training files, their race files, etc.
How interested are they? I guess it might be different because it's an interesting sport, and sure. I have many colleagues. I feel like techie people also like bike riding. So
yeah.
And the data collection is fun. And then you look at it and then you try, instead of getting better sleep or doing the obvious things, you tweak at little things in your training. How interested, how involved are the athletes?
Some are very involved. And some, to be honest, you say, oh, that was really good. And they're like, thanks. No, that's where it ends. But then some, you really do go into a deep dive because they have an interest or a passion or whatever, and they're super involved in it. And then you do get some which are just like, hey, I trust you. I feel good on the bike, so I don't need to worry about it myself. You know, it sort of takes an element away from them. So it really throws in between.
Do you feel like it makes a difference? Like, do people who care about the data maybe do a little bit better because they do their own reasoning? Or is it actually better to just not care as much and focus on the ride? Or
It's both ways, because sometimes, you know, you want the athlete to understand what he's doing, you know, just from a training prescription. And then he does the session and you say, you know, this is why we did this. However, at the same time, some of them that are super over-involved, you know, their brains go at 100,000 kilometers an hour. There's 100,000 different questions, and it sometimes works backwards against them because today they did 500 watts, tomorrow they'll do 490 and there's a big problem. But they don't understand it that, hey, your sleep score, you didn't sleep last night, you had a fight with your girlfriend or whatever. So there's an outside variable, but then they only fixated on that one performance. You know, so sometimes it's a bit of a game of tennis. You know, you just need to manage the personality correctly.
Do you have an issue interpreting, or do you feel like you fall into looking too close at the data? I could see that, as you just said, like there's different factors. Maybe you go up to altitude, which will have a big impact for a few days. How do you prevent being too close or incorrectly interpreting the data? Because the data is right, what you take away from it might not be
correct, and then it's what you do with it. So you know, if I take myself, I have kind of certain metrics that I look at within a window, and yes, I have some that I don't look at on a very, very like everyday basis, if you want to call it that. So I have sort of like a second data range of what I look at, but I try not, which it is, you know, we had spoken earlier, is that there's so much information available, you do get lost in translation. You know, an example I had with a coach the other day is there was a rider that didn't perform 100%, but he really went off on something completely else. And he did this huge deep dive into the data, which was actually very good work. I don't discredit him, but it kind of, he went so deep that he missed the point of exactly where the problem was. You know, and it was just, well, let's just go backwards so we can go forward. But he was already, you know, 3 weeks up the road on very good data. But that's where you get lost in translation sometimes.
Okay. You like hit these biases and maybe blind spots.
Yeah, correct.
And we can talk about that. Would be very interesting to talk about a little bit later. And you already said like having people be able to do analysis. How do you see technology in your field, maybe even just personally? Do you feel like it's better if it gets out of the way? I just want the results. Do you have fun playing with the tools? Where do you land on that?
I love playing with tools, I'll be honest. Like, I really do. I like, I like the software element of it. But on that side, as I said, I speak for myself. I do have a cutoff point where you don't want to kind of go so deep down the rabbit hole because there is so much freely available. But, you know, for me, I really like the software tools. You know, our data scientist on the team at the moment, I work super close with him, and he's creating phenomenal stuff in the background. And I'm like a kid in a candy shop with it, you know. So it is good, but again, you need to know what you're looking at. Does that make a decision? You know, can you make an informed decision of it? Can you understand what is going on? If the answer is yes, then you go forward. But, you know, as I said, some people do I mean, you have so much available that they get lost. And that's where I think it becomes dangerous in terms of too much data.
No stupid questions.
We're actually going to do another little game. A category that I like to call no stupid questions, and then immediately have a stupid question.
Sure.
So if I made my sports social network data available and public, and then you could see my performance data that I put out on my daily commute on my bike.
Yes.
Is there a chance that I still get discovered for the age group that I'm in, or would you need significantly more data than what this simple everyday?
It would definitely kind of bait me. So if I saw what you say, you were putting all your training data on Strava as an example, and I saw it and it kind of caught my attention, then, you know, the answer would be yes. So as an early factor, the answer would be yes. You know, if I saw just even the basics of what is available on Strava, which is, you know, they have quite a detailed info on stuff, yes, that would attract my attention. But then I would want a lot more from you after that. You know, so once I make contact and I'm like, hey, pretty good for a guy that commutes to work and back, you know, you whatever, one or two races, then I would go into a more deeper dive.
You'd be impressed. I get very sweaty when I
get to work. I've read it all over social media.
It's right there.
Yeah.
Does it help to have the data to convince riders? Was it trickier before? Is that a tool that helps you?
To come over to the team, you mean?
Or, yeah.
Yes and no. So you obviously look at the data and you can present to the rider, but within that realm, you presenting an overall view of why we would like you to be on the team. So where we see you, what your role would be, you know, do you get some freedom? Do you only set as a worker, which is also fine for some riders, you know? So from that side, we would also, but not in every case, say, you know, this is what we see in your data, and we believe if we do this with you, you'll also become a better rider. You know, so we have room for growth, whether it's performance or whether it's just from a mentality side, however we can support you. But it's not that, you know, as an example, I do an analysis of you and then we go to the call with your manager and I present this full data analysis back to you. It doesn't work like that. You know, we can say, you know, hey, we see you can improve these areas, or hey, we can make you stronger in this, or this is really good. But it's not, that doesn't really go back to the rider, because that's also what we look at, and we don't always want stuff like that public. You know, or teams in general don't want that, you know, because if the rider turns around and says, well, I don't think it's a good fit, which is fine, but then he lets that information out, it kind of, you know, it's not always the best.
He gets a free evaluation.
Yeah.
A thing I see very often is that, and even in personal life, we use data to confirm our own gut feeling.
Yes.
Do you have a way of trying, especially when making this big decision, you probably have, when you look at a rider, you have a feeling, you're like, well, I think this could be a candidate, or maybe you're skeptical. How is there a good way to avoid that? I mean, it does play a role and your expertise does matter. How can you avoid having just looking for data that confirms your belief right away?
Yeah, that's a good.
Do you see that as an issue at all?
No, not really. To be honest, it's not that you want to, like, we'd see, again, we see you as a rider, what we think. We'd look at the data and we think, okay, can he, you know, you're doing that role, that's why we look after you. So say you were second mountain support and we see you racing and that, we get that data. And then we think, once we look at all of that and we understand you as a rider, then we go, okay, can he fill the role like that within the team? You know, so that does, and then we go, wow, there's like nothing there. I don't, you know, then we don't do, you know, not always, but sometimes you go, okay, well, we're going to move on from you and we'll go look for somebody else. Or otherwise, we sometimes do get data and we go, wow, this is like a really big surprise. And then it goes to further investigation from that.
Do you still have a lot of spreadsheets? Is that what, like, just in a on practical terms, you already, I guess you have a software suite.
Yeah, so...
How often do spreadsheets appear in your day-to-day?
Not that much, to be honest. They have definitely faded out, but you still do have spreadsheets. I think Excel will never die. I'm sorry to say that, but I would probably say 70% of our stuff is now software data related, and then you can print what you're looking at or what you need versus working on only on spreadsheets. But I will say you do still work on a spreadsheet, but it's definitely a lot less in terms of overall time and volume.
Yeah, it's we still have, I see a lot of like Excel sheets being sent around, and then yep. And then they're off, just one column. And then
correct.
Even if you ingest them automatically, and then there's the spreadsheet, yeah. It's like, the column needs to be the same every time. Oh, I didn't.
Yeah. And then, we actually had that the other day with an Excel document where, the sum of was literally K9 or K8, but it threw everything out. Where now we are actually in the process of automizing it.
Yeah, I already asked you, right, spreadsheets? And you already said what I was going to ask, Excel somehow... It just doesn't die.
It won't die. And I'm not a Microsoft guy at heart. It gives me PTSD Windows. But from that side, Excel, I don't think will ever die yet. It's definitely less, but I can't see it dying yet at the moment.
We were talking about the key topic is the prediction. And you have always worked in rookie development and finding young talent and developing it. Is there a special sauce to how you predict and how you benchmark if somebody can keep growing?
Yes and no. So you can never, if someone tells you, oh, you'll be X in 4 years, they're selling you a story personally. But you can look at the data and understand, how I personally do it is I see where they are today. So how did they get here today? And then what I believe... they will be in, can we get more out of them? So they've grown to here, can they grow further? Is it 100% accurate? I don't think so in today's terms. I think we'll get a lot more accurate with it. But that is essentially what you want to do is understand where they are, where they will be where they are today and where they'll be in the future.
Do you feel like technology can still... leap you ahead? And I believe there has been a phenomenal development recently with abilities, and I bet you have the best engineers. Do you still feel like, oh, there's so much more that could be done?
I do, yes, definitely. Because, now with the use of whatever AI and those sort of platforms, it's an ongoing learning, as they always say, it's machine learning, but it's definitely an ongoing learning for both machine and you as a human being. So I definitely believe it'll improve. It'll definitely help. Will it be perfect? As I said, right now, I don't think so now, but you will definitely be able to get closer, I feel.
The corridor. I mean, it is a prediction.
Correct.
A prediction is inherently...
a prediction.
Yeah.
So
but the corridor, I guess, gets more narrow.
Correct. Yeah. I think you'll be able to funnel it a lot closer. So where you're going today, I think these six guys will go all the way. It'll probably only be three, or two or even one, which is also completely fine as long as you manage to secure that one or two. But I do believe that, even from last year to now, it's definitely become a lot more streamlined, from what you've learned, what you've seen, and then how you're doing it. So I definitely feel that is the pathway forward.
Rank the impact.
We have one more game. I don't know how much you're going to like this. It's you have to blindly rank the impact of a group of things. So I have five types of data points.
Yeah.
And you have to rank them 1 through 5
okay.
to see which one is the most important. And we'll start with long-term training data. How relevant is that for your decision-making?
It's important.
Can you give it a...
Okay, at the moment, 1. I would say 1.
That's number 1? Okay.
Okay, for now.
Okay. Recent training history. So the last few weeks, maybe.
2 for now, I would say that.
Okay, long-term history is still more important. actual race data from the last races?
Actually, so I would run it. I would run two to, we'd go to one race data, we'd go to, we'd still stay at three, and then long term would be one.
Okay.
I mean, long term would be two. My
number
apologies.
Two. Okay. Yeah. So recent history, long term history, race data.
Yes.
After that, recovery. And I think you're a proponent of recovery.
Yeah, I would go to number two on that.
And the rider's attitude, personality, motivation.
Yeah, it's important. I suppose I would be, I would probably have that as number one, because that's important. How a rider's personality is really how he would or wouldn't execute his job or execute stuff. That depends on the data you get back based on that as well, which would be short-term data, because it would be a rolling average of stuff. So yeah, I would go that one. Short-term data two, long-term three, race data three.
Okay.
Four, sorry.
Factors in, so this is not prediction anymore, just factors in general for the performance of a rider. New category, we have six this time, nutrition.
Yeah, in today's cycling, super important. So I'd go one for now on that.
Recovery.
They go hand in hand. So what's the third one?
Consistency.
Well, okay. These are all number one for now. Next one.
I'm not sure if it ever works like that. The coach.
Yeah, super important. Also, okay, give me all of them and then I'll put this puzzle together.
And mindset.
Wow, this is hard. These all would literally go to number one. I would say...
Recovery, nutrition, consistency, the coach, and the mindset.
Okay, we'll take those five. You need consistency first and foremost. So I would go consistency first. You need a good coach. So I would say that second, and then but the nutrition is also goes on the consistency, you know. So I would probably maybe just like 2.1, 2.2, 2.3.
It's a tight race.
Yeah, it's a tight race that, because all of those are really super, super important and interjoined. Without the one, you can't really do the other. So you need the consistency for progression. You need your nutrition to be able to progress. You need a good coach on and off the bike, so to speak. So prescription and personality is really important to get the best out of the athlete. Unfortunately, I wouldn't really give that an order. I would almost put them all horizontal. Eh? It's really an important... That is essentially how you get an athlete to be better.
It is an interplay of all these things Correct. Together.
So you have an athlete in the middle, and then everything else is just kind of circling around it.
And then you optimize whichever one is
Correct.
Lacking right now.
Yeah.
We have talked about the collection, all the things that go into the machine
yeah.
that you just put in the top, and then you stir and
spits it out.
Do some calculations.
Yeah.
Then we talked about predictions, diagnostics. I mean, you always start, I guess, with description, diagnostic, prediction, and then prescription. You try to find the action that is correct and right, but it's not everything. There is yeah. only, I guess you can only get out of the data what is in the data.
Correct.
And there is still probably so much human element, especially at this level of performance.
Yeah.
So that would be very interesting to maybe hear a little bit more about the relationship to the rider with the coach. You already said there's sometimes people that look very good on paper, but I guess even the connection coach to rider can play a difference in performance. If somebody hates where he is,
yeah, correct,
he won't perform as well. Or if somebody loves the team and gets along very well with everybody, that probably has an impact. As well as decision making, where the human still matters in experience, and that would be very interesting to get into. How does the coach trainee relationship play out? Is it a fight? Who is maybe? And I was wondering, you working with young riders,
yeah.
are they easier to go with because they don't know yet, or is it harder because they don't know yet and they probably have all kinds of ideas?
Again, so the answer is yes and no to everything of what you said. So it really depends on the rider itself and on that personality. So, you know, whether it's a young rider coming through or whether it's a seasoned pro, you know, that it doesn't really change. The part that you do see a lot with the young riders now, because they've grown up in this kind of information technology rich world, and they, you know, it's like second nature to them, to what they do, and they're super involved. Like every kid now, barring one out of a group of 30, has a power meter. They have Training Peaks or whatever performance software, and information is readily available. But some of them do think that they know more than you, and they very, I won't say opinionated, because that's in a strong personality, you know, and they're like, well, I know that this is right. I should do 80 grams, not 120 grams of carbs. And you're like, okay. So you do kind of, with them, it's more of an education process with them, but your connection to the coach is, it has to be close. You know, it's not that you have to talk to them. Well, at this level, you need to communicate every single day, and you need to have a really close connection. There needs to be a lot of trust from the rider to the coach, and the coach also needs to trust the rider. When that element is gray, it's potential for not the best outcome, put it that way. You know, if you go down the coaching side to, you know, like an age grouper, so, you know, if I had to work with you, that level of communication isn't really warranted, because you also have, it's not your career, you have a job, etc. But hey, let's catch up on coaching and you're doing this well or whatever. But yeah, at this level, even from the under 19s, under 23s, that coach, that human connection is really important. That is why I think at the moment the AI coaching is, it's good. You know, like if I download it and I can ask it to give me a 6-week program, I'm sure I'll be better at the end of the 6 weeks. But the problem is, when things start going wrong, or there's outside factors like I fought with my wife or whatever the case may be, it doesn't understand that yet. You know, and I think that is where, at the super highest level, is where things kind of can go very wrong.
Do you feel like things don't quite show up in the data, or do you maybe even catch riders having, because there's the subjective experience.
Correct.
And I know that that is a metric in itself, the perceived exertion.
Yes.
Do you see big differences there and it can help, or do you even, see that there's misunderstandings where you're like, no, the data is not supporting what you're saying?
Yes, definitely. So you always, how I explained it is, you correlate the two. So you correlate the data and you correlate the athlete itself. So you have objective and subjective. So subjective is the athlete and objective is the data. So I could open the file and go, well, this was amazing. You know, like excellent, good numbers, good sessions, everything was spot on. And then I phone you and you're like, oh, mate, I was on the couch last night. I've lost my job, whatever. You know, that is, and then I need to correlate those two to make sure that tomorrow or where you are today is good to go forward. You know, so, or you see really bad data and you're like, oh, what's wrong? You're on the couch again. You're like, no, everything's the best in the world. You know, so it's definitely subjective and objective when you're looking at that.
Yeah. And sometimes you get like an angry ride and then you see, like, yes, oh, this, what you did yesterday, correct, do that again.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, well, or you're like, had a terrible fight with my girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, angry road.
Message your sister again and go, go do the interval. So, yeah.
Do you feel decisions are easier to make with the data, or are they just better decisions? Like, does it help you make the right decision, or maybe both?
Yeah, it's both. It's definitely. So you can make better, precise, informed decisions based on the data, especially in today's times, if you want to call it that. So that is definitely, without a doubt.
I think we already touched on this, but again, Moneyball and data versus yes, personal experience. In the movie, they kind of dismissed having these softer qualities and somebody having issues at home or something like that. There, it was kind of dismissed that it's not the most relevant factor. I feel like here you have already kind of touched on it being not the opposite, but those softer qualities, attitude, mood, are really a big factor. Do you evaluate that, or do you feel like the writer himself has a good feeling on that? How do the softer qualities inform decisions?
So again, personality wise, some riders have a really strong personal feeling on that, you know, and they can express that also in a positive way. Some, to be honest, cannot do, let's call it self-reflection, if you want to use that word. But they're like, as an example, if you're tracking heart rate variability, so you have that data and you see there's maybe a trend is wrong or there's kind of high, low, etc., you can also then go to the athlete and say, hey, you know, I've picked this up, whatever, your sleep is less, your stress is higher, your mood is down, your RPE is up, and your heart rate variability, just on what I see from the data you give me, what's going on, you know. And then sometimes they go, yeah, you know, things aren't good. So it is definitely, especially with how kind of high stress pro cycling is, especially in today's peloton and stuff, it really is an important factor. But you can kind of sometimes pick stuff up quicker before the athlete says something to you.
The saying would be interesting, how important is still a conversation, a phone call? I guess you're not always like hand in hand with every athlete.
Yes.
How important is that still in an age of data, that you just like, how are you feeling today?
Really super important, you know, because sometimes data will say, you know, he's not good or there's a problem or whatever. You know, he wakes up and he, you know, example, I wake up and I'll get told, oh, my sleep wasn't good and my HRV is down, etc. And I'm like, well, how do you feel? They're like, no, fine. And you say, well, then get on your bike and go to work, you know. So from that side, it is super important. But you can also get it on the same side where they're saying, oh, no, I'm fine. And you're going, well, the trend is definitely not showing you fine. So, you know, you kind of work at both sides. But it is really important that it does help with decision making. And you also find out if an athlete's kind of honest or not.
Does that happen?
Yeah, because they often say, oh, everything is great, if it's not, because they don't want to lose a training day because they think they go backwards or they lose form and fitness, where sometimes it's not. And you say, well, let's just do 3 easy days, maybe a day off and 2 easy days, and we can get back on the program on Thursday. And then you see all that data and all those trends completely change in a positive direction. And then you say to them, well, you know, now you went out and you did super well. So yeah, there is that.
Do you ever catch riders just like skipping a day and like not telling you, and then you're like, well, this is like, there's no workout here?
Or definitely.
Does that still, or
it's not a lot, but it is. And then, but I can tell them, I'm lucky enough to hear that, you know, athletes will say, look, I'm just not feeling it today or whatever. And it's very few and far between days. But, you know, if you log on and you see there's a red day and you're like, you know, what's going on? Sometimes they just don't upload, you know, which is sometimes within 24 hours, or they, whatever, the battery goes flat on their Garmin unit or whatever, and they don't do anything about it. But rarely do they just, I mean, hardly ever, never just don't go out and train and load a file.
So the dog ate my homework version of pro cycling is the battery went dead and I couldn't record.
Pretty much. That's it.
That's why.
Yeah. Oh, my Garmin battery's flat.
Like. Again.
But very few days of dog ate my Garmin. Yeah.
Dog ate my Garmin. That's, that should be the headline of the podcast. Yeah. Dog ate my Garmin. Do you do a lot of querying, analysis, technical work yourself, and how much do you enjoy that?
I do. We also have our data scientist who does a lot more now for me, but I do a lot of it. I do enjoy it. I will say that it's not like, you know, I open the computer and I'm like, oh, I've got to do this. I do enjoy it. To a point.
Do you feel like you're being enabled to get all the information? Because I feel like that's a big factor now, and things have improved so much that you can have very non-technical people and management and CEOs get insight, and that's still a key factor. Do you have a similar situation?
Yeah, just to understand you, it's like, yes, you do, because when you said management and that, you sometimes need to... You take the technical side of it, and then you need to almost lower it into everyday language and then hand it over to them. So you got to kind of translate from A to B. Like it's definitely a thing. Our data science, as an example, just dumps the highest level of, like, I mean, you need to put some of it into ChatGPT or something to even for myself to get the answers out of it. But yeah, you are definitely, the answer would be yes. And yes, I enjoy it.
And then that does sound like technology has enabled you to drill down deeper, and the access is widened.
Correct.
Through technology.
Yeah.
We talked earlier about manual data input. Do you see that as a big factor or issue when people have to put things in?
Yes and no. Also, again, like, is someone kind of knowledgeable, or do they just have no interest in it? You know, in 9 out of 10 times now, it's okay. But in the past, we have had times where, I mean, this is back in, I can actually tell you a funny story on this. I was in South Africa at the time, and I was told to fly to Italy to a rider because he hadn't uploaded data for a really significant amount of time. And we were working with a company, the unit was a little bit tricky. It was still in its early phases, but it wasn't that tricky. And he was kind of challenged, to say the least, in terms of uploads. And as I said, I had to sit on a 24-hour flight to go and to upload his data for him. So it does happen. However, now, as kind of things have progressed, and it's really kind of easy how things talk to each other, it's not really that much at the moment. More it's potentially a bug fix or something from a manufacturer if there's something going on. But typically from riders and stuff, it's not that much of a problem at the moment.
Do you have a lot of like manual processes where somebody has to like rate something or send something over? Because that's always...
Yes, we do, especially on like a subjective information from a rider. That's kind of a manual input, if we call it, where, you know, that sometimes becomes a challenge. If it's not done automatically, it becomes a bit of a challenge.
Okay, because that's kind of my philosophy and ours, that any manual step is a mistake or is a potential for error. And I kind Fair of enough. Like to, as a data engineer, I like to treat it as like, if it's manual, I don't trust it.
Yeah.
Which you can do at a certain level. Maybe you, and sometimes that's all you get, and then you have to deal with it. But anything that involves a human is inherently flawed in a way.
Fair play.
And
for me, it's time consuming, you know. So, you know, even if I take something as simple as our weekly reporting document, you know, we've literally 98% automized that whole process. You know, so for us as coaches, it's easy in relative terms. Yes, you still have to manually put in, you know, hey, this guy did nothing and he lay on the beach all week as feedback, or he was phenomenal. But I mean, that takes 6 seconds in terms of typing. But everything else that we had to manually insert is now fully automized. You know, so from that side, it's significantly helped us.
Okay. And you would say that that is important, because
super important. It's time saving, because before it was time consuming. Also everything's in one place, etc. So it's definitely improved just that one small area in terms of what we do as coaches, you know, from that side.
I have one more question about race day. Is it because are you moving along with the, are you in the car with the laptop on your lap or in the control room? How can I picture data-driven decision-making?
So that's normally pre and post. So it's not always in race, although sometimes, yes, I get a phone call or a coach gets a phone call, hey, give us this performance outcome, you know, and you would give it in the race to the sporting director. However, a lot of it is done pre and then directly post, you know. So the pre-race would be, this is what the game plan is, these are the scenarios, we give the information, whether it's something as easy as climbing times on Tourmalet, what we think the peloton will do, and we do the calculations, or historical values, or whatever it may be, you know, crosswinds coming up, etc. But then post-race, its full kind of analysis, feedback on the performance side of it from that data, and then we make decisions for the next day based off that.
We just talked about decision-making, how data is used for it. Do you have a good summary on what are the key factors? How do you use data to make decisions?
We make decisions based on, obviously, what we see. So whether it's benchmarks, performance factors, historical data, as I said, on how we got here, what we see, et cetera, that is really important. In terms of what our benchmarks or how we analyze that, not really going to say on the podcast now, but it data-driven is a big decision maker in terms of what we do. And then we couple that, you know, again, as I said, to the human side of the athlete. And what our scouting group, as I said, is Tim and Michael, what they see in the athlete, do we correlate it? And then we go from there. Because sometimes, as I said, you see really not the best data, but the rider's performing, or vice versa, you know. So those two make really important decisions. But essentially, I hand over what I see in the data, and then they go from there.
How would you say has scouting, the role of scouting, changed since you've introduced more data-driven decision-making?
I think it's fine-tuned it to make it a lot more, how do you say, just because 10 kids are winning bike races, it doesn't mean that those 10 kids have a future. You know, where now you take those 10 kids that are winning a bike race, but you probably only really take four of them, you know, or you are interested in four, and you kind of watch the other five or other six kind of progress over time. So it's helped, I wouldn't say sift out non-talent, but just make a more correct, informed, specific decision, especially on how modern cycling is in today's times.
And the traditional scouting of having people assess riders is still key there. Aspect.
Yeah, 100%. But you definitely need the two to talk to each other and come to an agreement. Like, I don't believe you can only do one without the other now.
Is there ever a big disagreement? Does it not align the assessment?
Not a lot, but sometimes yes. You know, example the other day, I said, hey, you know, to our scouts, I said, you know, there's really nothing here that blows my hair back. What do you see in the races? And they were like, no, he's really performing well. You know, so there then it goes to a bit of a deeper discussion. You know, we had that last year as well, where it was almost opposite, really phenomenal numbers. But from a human side, we didn't really feel he could do what, you know, nothing to do with numbers, but just from a human side, we didn't feel that he would carry this through all the way through. So, you know, it does, that marriage needs to be really good.
And how can you, if a cyclist is not already on your roster, assess, I guess that's through conversation at some point, that you can assess attitude, motivation, mindset?
Yeah, correct. So typically how like the process would work, there'd be identification of the athlete, then, you know, the scout would say, hey, we're interested, whatever, can we get access to your data? We'd get access, I'd give my feedback back, and then from there it normally goes to, should there be interest, then it goes to the actual scouting one-on-one phone call or meeting with the rider, parent, agent, whatever, whoever's in the call, and that goes into a more deeper dive in terms of that human.
I can ask you questions all day, and we can go in, because also you cover all the fields. Or what was your current carb number that you're, because it's funny how cycling, I feel like, is influencing running, because the runners for many years were still on like 30 grams an hour or something.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you guys are taking how much?
Yeah.
And now I think through triathlon, the information on the carb intake, is like moving over, and
It's definitely increased even in cycling from what it was before. You know, even in cycling before, it was a fairly low volume of per hour. But what you got to also remember, whether you're a triathlete, a runner, a cyclist, and that is, you can say, oh, I do 120 grams an hour, which is, I mean, it's a high volume of carbs. But if your body, you can take it in, but if your body doesn't actually absorb it and use it as a fuel source, you know, you kind of just going to the toilet afterwards, you know. So it's it really, there again, really specific to the athlete. Yes, you can train your gut to absorb more, but there will be a ceiling where you just don't take it in.
On that note, what are your iterations? Like, how often do you adjust? How often do you give input in your training planning? Do you make a program for 6 weeks and then I see you again? Is it daily, hourly? What's your cadence?
Typically a week, but you change to, like, you know, so I'll build your program for a week. And as an example, you come back from training today and it really wasn't good. We understand why, and then I'll change it for tomorrow. You know, so it's built for a week, but it's adaptable day by day.
And is adjusted as
things
occur. I have one more question, because our slogan is high tech with a heartbeat. And
yes.
That's why I like my company so much, that there's like this personality thing and the excitement for the technology that we built.
Yes.
What is something that you are very excited, or maybe even most excited about in your work, in your field?
I like seeing people progress. You know, so it's not, yes, you want, like, okay, I love winning bike races. Okay, simple as that, first and foremost. It's not always about winning bike races. You also want athletes to perform and progress. So you want them to be better. You know, whether not everybody is going to win a bike race, but somebody, you know, if he's going to carry bottles, he needs to be the best bottle carrier, unfortunately. That's what it is. And if he goes from a medium bottle carrier to the best, you know, domestique that the world has, you know, like if we take Danny Van Poppel, I believe he's the world's best lead out rider, you know. So from that side, I haven't worked with him for super long, but, you know, he's definitely grown into that role, and that would want, you know, that's essentially exciting for my job. And that's what I like seeing the most, and winning bike races.
Obviously, that's, yeah. I mean, that's the,
yeah, it's
that's
a holy
goal. Yeah. Where do you see the most potential for improvement in your work? Is it the technology, algorithms getting better, data quality? Where do you feel like, oh, if we can make more gains there, that would make a big improvement?
Yeah, a little bit of what you said, definitely from the sports science side, you know, to make informed decisions or decisions kind of easier. And with that, we need, whether it's algorithms, platforms, et cetera, from a data aspect, you know, to be able to, I'd say, analyze or read that data quicker or more precise. I think that will help us make decisions a lot easier. You know, whether that's how to tactically win a race, or whether that's signing a certain rider, I think that, or, you know, training prescription to make the rider better, I think that it all falls within that realm of work.
I think that's a good sign. Thank you so much for taking the time.
It's a pleasure.
Again. I understand that this time of year is critical for you, and you're eager to go back, but I'm very happy to get all this insight and information from you and share your interesting story of data-driven decision-making.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. And also, as I said, thanks for being a part of the team. It's been great. Got a guy that wants to be on the podcast.
I have a third member in the cast now.
Yeah.
Let us know in the comments, how do you handle large amounts of data? What problems do you typically run into, and how do you solve them?
This was AI That Works. Real stories from the people making data and AI work in the real world. See you next time.